AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the ABC Civic News, Media
I'm
app.
Will Reeve. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Capitol Hill today, arriving to applause in the Senate, but also working to convince holdout Republicans to approve more military and humanitarian aid to defend against Russian attacks. Today, Russia launching a barrage of missile attacks across Ukraine. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, once supportive, now reluctant. ABC's Jay O'Brien after McCarthy's meet with Zelensky.
Did President Zelensky put any of your concerns to rest in that meeting?
I think he answered a lot of questions that I had for him on accountability.
Did he change your mind?
I got a vote.
McCarthy also under pressure with a potential government shutdown just over a week away. His far-right flank so far not on board to pass a stopgap measure to extend the deadline to October 31st. In South Carolina, disgraced attorney Alec Murdoch pled guilty to financial fraud and money laundering charges in federal court today. Murdoch is serving life for the double murder of his wife and son. This is ABC News. In Indiana, an urgent manhunt for a murder suspect. Investigators say Kevin Mason walked out of jail last week and hasn't been seen since. Marion County Sheriff Kerry Forrestal says a clerical error led to his release.
We're short-staffed. They're underpaid. That's not an excuse, but it's a fact.
The sheriff says Mason called his girlfriend first thing.
His conversation to her was, "I'm walking away and I will meet you." She picked him up. By the time we picked up on her, he wasn't with her.
Forrestal says there's a round-the-clock search for Mason, charged in a 2021 Minnesota killing. He served just 2 days behind bars. In South Texas, SpaceX launches angering nearby residents. They're suing Cameron County for closing the beach before every blastoff. So far, the court's siding with the county and SpaceX. Rupert Murdoch, now 92, stepping down as chairman of Fox and News Corporation. His son Lachlan taking over as News Corporation chair and continuing as Fox CEO. Will Reeve, ABC News.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's housing market is still a seller's market, but more new inventory will likely change that. The latest sales numbers show the inventory of existing homes for sale in Wisconsin went up in August for the second straight month. The Wisconsin Realtors Association says overall lack of inventory kept existing sales down in August. The median purchase price statewide was $300,000. That's 10% higher than a year ago. The push is on to rally public support for upgrades to American Family Field. Here's Brittany Merlot.
Maintenance for the Brewers Stadium would take hundreds of millions of dollars and keep the Brewers in Milwaukee through 2050. A coalition of business and community leaders has launched a new digital ad campaign. The spots will run on platforms streaming the National League playoffs in Wisconsin. Meanwhile, Democratic state lawmakers want the Brewers to double their money for upkeep for American Family Field. A new Republican bill would have the Brewers pitch in $100 million. Democrats want to raise that to $200 million. State and local taxpayers would bring the total fund to $700 million. I'm Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
A group of bipartisan lawmakers is trying to revive the idea of ranked choice voting in Wisconsin. Nate Wegehout has more.
Under the bill, U.S. House and Senate candidates would compete in a single statewide primary regardless of political party. The top five candidates would then advance to the general election, where voters would rank them in order of preference. Three Democrats and two Republicans are proposing the bill. They say it will make lawmakers more accountable to a wider range of voters. A nearly identical bill was introduced in 2021. That bill died in committee. Ranked choice voting is already in place in Maine and Alaska. Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Researchers say they've come up with some tactics to help mitigate misinformation online. More from Eric Tegedoff.
Jevin West is a co-founder of the Center for an Informed Public. He's also the co-creator of a digital literacy course, aptly named Calling BS. West says one strategy for fighting misinformation is something he puts on a sticker for his students. Think more, share less.
Just a very simple little statement, which is, think more, so sort of take a little bit more time to source things before you share it, and then just share less. So think more, share less.
Another method for lessening the impact of misinformation is inoculation. That is, helping people on social media better recognize false information when they see it. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A package of bills in Congress would increase access to Medicaid soon before people leave jail or prison. The Reverend Sarah Lawal says people in prison are among the most marginalized in society.
If we really believe in rehabilitation and redemption, then we have to be able to give incarcerated people the tools and the resources they need to be as successful as possible when they re-enter our community.
A study in the New England Journal of Medicine finds people who've just finished their prison sentences are more than 100 times more likely to die from a drug overdose than the general population. Bald eagles are making a comeback in Wisconsin after last year's bird flu outbreak. Madison Audubon is out with its final eagle data for the year. Last year, volunteers of the program only found a new eaglet in 35% of 110 nests. This year, the number was 89%. Wildlife biologist Summer Madison tells the Journal Sentinel it's a sign that eagles are developing immunity to the strain. Last year's bird flu was seen as the worst threat to eagles since DDT 50 years ago. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin Republicans have proposed a bill to guarantee the right for residents to garden in the state. According to a report from the Center Square, the local city council of Two Rivers, Wisconsin, was attempting to limit people's ability to grow food and flowers for aesthetic purposes. Two Rivers has an ordinance limiting where people could grow a garden. Democratic lawmakers questioned if the bill was state overreach, arguing while people have a right to use their property as they see fit, a balance must be struck with legitimate community concerns like pollinators and public safety. United States Senator Tammy Baldwin, along with 100 co-sponsors in Congress, have introduced the Child Care Stabilization Act. The legislation is intended to set up child care programs across the country, providing $16 billion in funding each year for the next 5 years. Child care issues have been at the forefront of Wisconsin politics, as Governor Tony Evers' special session this week to address child care and workforce issues in the state was largely ignored by Republican legislators. A Public Citizens Health Research Group report found that Wisconsin is one of the best states in the country when it comes to protecting residents from exceedingly rare instances of physicians injuring or endangering patients. The report found Wisconsin was the eighth best state in the country when it came to the average number of serious disciplinary actions per 1,000 physicians each year. The report found there were just 36 serious disciplinary actions each year, a rate of 1.23 per 1,000 physicians. Administrator for the Wisconsin Ethics Commission, Dan Carlton, has made it clear that if any of his staff members leak details from an ongoing investigation, he will personally terminate them and refer them to law enforcement. According to a Wisconsin Law Journal report, the strict reminder comes following accusations by a talk radio host that Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz's campaign conducted money laundering. A spokesperson for Protasiewicz called the accusations a conspiracy theory. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
And now, your Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead.
We are on repeat. Another warm day with highs hitting the upper 70s to low 80s, alongside some more increasing humidity. Soak it up now, because the 80s in October run on nearly empty. A mostly sunny day for most of the state. However, southeastern areas, like Milwaukee, will remain under cloudy skies. This comes from a front that is draped over Illinois and is sending waves of moisture across the state line with a southeast wind. A few more scattered sprinkles spread into the southern areas, but rain remains very light. A few pop-up thunderstorms are also possible in the north central towns later this afternoon and into the evening hours. None will be severe. In fact, they will be quite brief. However, the storms may produce some heavy rainfall of nearly a half an inch possible. Have a tremendous Thursday, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The Packers' David Bakhtiari speaks out. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. There were rumors that left tackle David Bakhtiari declined to play in Atlanta on Sunday because the game was on turf. I asked Bakhtiari if that story was true.
I've never leave him hang out to dry. Like, I signed up to play. I'm planning on playing, and when I can play, I'm going to play. So clearly, if I'm not playing, there's something going on. And it hasn't been a... It's not like it's been a secret. It's been something I've been battling with, and it's been shitty. It's been weighing on me a lot.
Green Bay is getting ready to host the Saints on Sunday at noon. Yesterday in Chicago, there were reports that the FBI had raided the Bears' front offices at Hallis Hall the day after Alan Williams had resigned as the team's defensive coordinator. The NFL Network says the FBI story was not true. Meanwhile, Bears quarterback Justin Fields says learning a new offense has been complicated.
Of course, you know, things that I didn't like, I felt like, you know, I wasn't necessarily playing my game. Felt like I was kind of robotic and not playing like myself.
What do you think was causing you to think so much, maybe?
You know, could be, coaching.
Fields would later claim that he was taken out of context. College football, the Badgers take on the struggling Purdue Boilermakers. Tomorrow night, kickoff at 6 o'clock. Head coach Luke Fickle on what's missing in the Badgers running game.
There's things that take a toll, and whether it's maybe it was the first half, maybe it was us trying to but not establishing, you know, the ability to run the football well enough to create some energy, but maybe those body blows made a difference.
Baseball, the Brewers with a convincing 8-2 win over the Cardinals. Tyrone Taylor had a big night at the plate. Jeff Levering, Bally Sports Wisconsin, with the call.
The Brewers have just one hit since that Tyrone Taylor homer in the fourth.
High fly ball, deep left field. Palacios back at the track. Wall, goal! And a big insurance run for the Brewers. It's 5-2 Crew.
Brewers manager Craig Counsell.
Yeah, I mean, just continuing to put the ball in the air and do damage with it. So he's, bottom of the lineup. That kind of production has been changed our offense for sure.
Taylor, after the game.
I feel pretty good, you know. I'm just glad to be helping out the team and going up there, being consistent with an approach and going up there and being confident. And, yeah, it's good to help. That's huge. You know, that's a clutch at bat by all the guys before Cannon, and then to drive in those runs right there, give Dev a break, didn't have to come into the game. It's huge for us. We know the deal. We're just trying to take it one game at a time and win. And as long as we handle our business, we'll be all right.
So the Brewers' magic number is now 4. At Wrigley Field, former Bears quarterback Jim McMahon was a special guest at the ballpark. The Cubs ended up losing to the Pirates 13-7. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Red Delicious, Honey Crisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly clear this afternoon with highs around 80. Winds out of the southeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows around 54. Tonight, mainly clear skies. Overcast tomorrow. Slight chance for isolated thunderstorms. Highs level off around 76. Chance for scattered storms Saturday and Sunday, 72. Saturday, 66. Sunday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 76.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Joining us today, this is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Joined, as always, by Mr. Luke Mathers and Mr. Aaron Zommers. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution. And it is Thursday, which means the professor is in office hours with Professor John Shelton. Gentlemen, I'll start with you, Professor Shelton. How are you doing this Thursday afternoon?
I'm doing great. You know, for all the UW people out there, we got a big UW summit tomorrow that AFT Wisconsin has been organizing. It's first step in taking back our UW system. So if people out there are aware, of the union and aren't signed up, let me know. You can join. I just got to work in the UW system, and I'm pumped because I've been putting a lot of work into this, and it's going to be great.
Hey, take your pitch, Professor Shelton. Give your shout out. We'll have during one of the breaks, I'll have you look up the site so we can give that a shout out at the end of the show as well today to remind everybody. Luke and Aaron, how are you guys doing today?
Good. Well, it's a Thursday afternoon. Glad to be with you on the airwaves. And this is going to be my final Town Call show for a little while here. Going to be on a scheduled absence. So I'm looking forward to the travel jitters that I'm currently having, making sure, going through the back of my mind, making sure that everything's supposed to be packed. The backpack is set and ready to go.
I'm doing pretty well, too, on this Thursday. We'll be pretty sad. We'll miss Luke. Also, not travel jitters so much as, oh no, my parents are leaving for 3 weeks and hopefully I know what I'm doing.
Oh gosh, darn it. It would be a problem if we threw some type of Project X party here every day for the next 3 weeks.
That would never happen.
Little Kid Cudi in the background. Okay. Great wink there. Great wink.
Given the stream viewers a little bit of a little bit of something to look forward to themselves. So what are we talking today, gentlemen? I would like to discuss the upcoming government shutdown. We'll get into a little bit of the details of what it might entail, why this is important, why it's relevant. And Professor Shelton is going to take the angle of freedom and approach it as to why American democracy is going to be impacted and should care about these type of problems. I will take the start right now just to give a brief introduction to what a government shutdown is and why it's looking pretty likely that we will have another one. To offer the context behind this, why government shutdowns occur, according to the Brookings Institute, under the Anti-Deficiency Act, which was initially passed in 1884 and amended in 1950, federal agencies cannot spend or obligate any money without an appropriation, which is approval from Congress. When Congress fails to enact the 12 annual appropriation bills, referring to the 12 subcommittees, of course, these are agriculture, commerce, justice and science, defense, energy and water, financial services and general government, homeland security, interior and environment, labor, HHS, education, legislative branch, military construction and VA, state foreign operations, and transportation hub. When Congress fails to enact the 12 annual appropriation bills, federal agencies must cease all non-essential functions until Congress acts. This is known as a government shutdown. If Congress were to enact some but not all of the 12 appropriation bills, only agencies without appropriations have to shut down, which is, of course, known as a partial shutdown.
Yeah, and the reason, Will, I'm going to be gone, but the government runs out of its fiscal year at the end of this month. The end
is this
of the-
a coincidence, Luke? The government's running out of money and shutting down because Luke's gone?
I was going to say, have you ever seen Luke and the government in one place?
I'm flattered. I am Luke truly flattered that you think that I have that much control. But no, not something that I was going to get a chance to really discuss and give my input on. So I wanted to have a conversation now before I am out for the next couple weeks about why we keep having these and what we believe that the view and the kind of the politics around them, because I don't think it's a shock that in over the last 30 years or so, we've seen a very large increase in government shutdowns, because there hasn't really been a whole lot of consequences for the parties that are involved when it comes to a shutdown. They use it as a threat because there are some people in elected office that would rather see the government get shut down. So it's not that big of a deal to them, because they're like, well, we like small government. And when the government's not working, that's a good thing in their opinion. And so over the last 30 years, 33, since 1990, we've had 15 government shutdowns. And the fact that it's something that just keeps happening, unless we change the incentives for how our elected officials are operating, we're going to just continue to see this as a political tool. And the people that are affected by them, the workers and the individuals reliant on the services that the government provides, are the ones that suffer when political games are being played out in Washington. So if you've got thoughts on the shutdown looming 9 days away, September 30th is the deadline for Congress to act on this, and you want to share your thoughts, give us a call, send us a text, 844-967-2789. You're listening to Town Call across Civic Media. Professor Shelton, what are your thoughts on this most recent looming shutdown and kind of the trend that we've been seeing over the past 30 plus years of this being an increased occurrence in our politics?
Yeah. So let's start with this first. First of all, you know, there are narratives out there about our political system that go something like this. Why can't these two political parties just get along and figure out a way to move forward? And that narrative is wrong, because if you look at every single government shutdown since the 1990s, as you were talking about, Luke, it's always instigated by Republicans. And I would actually argue that Republicans have paid a price for it. In the 90s, Newt Gingrich, basically forced Clinton into a position where he had to let the government shut down. Republicans paid the price for that. I mean, Clinton, for all of my critiques of Clinton, ended up having a very successful, very successful, at least in terms of what he was trying to accomplish, presidency. Trump, I think, took a lot of the blame for the shutdown back in, when was that, 2018?
December 2018, January right, 2019.
Right. So it's Republicans that are instigating this. And I find a great irony in this, because it's a small group of Republicans. It's the Freedom Caucus, largely, that we can unpack who they are and what that means a little bit more in a little bit. But I think there's a great irony in this, because I was actually just thinking about this a second ago as we were talking. Back in 1981, when the professional air traffic controllers went on strike, these were 10,000 workers. Reagan had just been inaugurated that year, right? Very anti-union president. Air traffic controllers, many of them, actually their union had endorsed Reagan. Many of them voted for him. They went on strike because, just as is the case now with a lot of workers, inflation was eating into people's paychecks. There was a lot of economic insecurity. And so these air traffic controllers went on strike. Reagan fired them and essentially replaced them all, which set a framework for lots of other employers, especially in the private sector, to do that with their workers in the decades since. Here's the point I'm trying to make. When Reagan fired those workers, he gave a very famous speech telling them that they had 48 hours to go back to work. And what he said is, government cannot shut down the assembly line. Government cannot shut down. The things that government does are so important that you can't have these workers going on strike. And Reagan, he you know, all these Republicans in Congress now, he's their boy, right? They all talk about Reagan as
the patron saint.
Right. And yet Reagan made that point, obviously, in a very grotesque way toward the air traffic controllers. But you would think that this party that is supposedly the party of conservatism and you know, law and order and stability, supposedly, they wouldn't want the government to shut down because they would want things to remain stable. But that's not actually what they want. They want to diminish the things that government can do for people. They want to diminish the freedoms that ordinary Americans have. And we can get into that a little bit more if you want. But there's a deep irony in this that you have it's Republicans who are willing to essentially just, you know, like sacrifice the well-being of Americans in order to make this political point that government should do less things for people.
And I'd like to add too. So Luke noted how many total shutdowns we have had since the 90s. I'd like to add that only four of them had operations ceased for more than one business day. We noted in 95, 96, when President Clinton and the Republican Congress were unable to agree on spending levels, the government shut down twice for a total of 26 days. In 2013, a standoff over funding for the Affordable Care Act resulted in a 16-day shutdown. And in December of 2018, January 2019, Donald Trump's dispute over border wall funding led to a 35-day shutdown. Now, that was only a partial shutdown because Congress had previously passed five of the 12 appropriation bills, but that 35-day shutdown was the longest in United States history.
And one really important thing about that, a lot of people probably don't remember this. Arguably, that shutdown stopped because the flight attendants and air traffic controllers were talking about going on strike. It was, you know, Sarah Nelson, who is one of the most important labor leaders in this country, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, was effectively organizing a general strike in the airline industry. And, you know, it's hard to know what somebody's internal motivations were. But I think the Trump administration realized that if they didn't basically kind of capitulate, then air travel was going to shut down because of this and they were going to get blamed for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that 2018 to 2019 shutdown, I believe, was during a period of unified control amongst Republicans, which is a fascinating aspect of the politics, too, because most of the time you see a shutdown occur when there's divided government. But the Republican Party was in charge of the White House with the Trump administration. And until that Congress got sworn in January of 2019, Republicans had both the U.S. Senate and the House. And so it was a very interesting time, politics there. It just seems, though, that it is the Republican Party that is okay with these shutdowns and uses it. Should we not have a method of being able to hold elected officials accountable if they can't come to the agreements they need to pass these? I feel like there should be consequences. Like, if there is other systems of government have votes of no confidence, or you have to, like, go through and hold new elections, I feel like that should be something, or just having some kind of stopgap that would prevent these shutdowns from becoming more and more frequent, because the services that aren't going to be provided come October 1st to the people that need them, there's going to be real suffering. But you, John, pointed out that it was the Republicans that suffered in the 90s and in the 2000s facing those political consequences. But I don't know if they're still happening. It doesn't seem like those consequences are enough. And so we're coming up here on a break, but we're going to continue this conversation surrounding government shutdowns. We are joined by Professor John Shelton, having our office hours session here on a Thursday afternoon. If you've got questions for the professor, we want to hear them. 844-967-2789. We're going to continue the conversation around the shutdown, and we'll also have some fun. We got our labor fantasy football locks of the week coming up, and we'll get some more fun headlines in. You're listening to Town Call across Civic Media. We'll be right back. He's looking for a super tie rap that's cleaner than a boss soap, and I'm the dirtiest thing in sight. Matter of fact, bring out the girls and let's have a mud fight.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Will Reeve. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Capitol Hill today, arriving to applause in the Senate. But also working to convince holdout Republicans to approve more military and humanitarian aid to defend against Russian attacks. Today, Russia launching a barrage of missile attacks across Ukraine. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, once supportive, now reluctant. ABC's Jay O'Brien after McCarthy's meet with Zelensky.
Did President Zelensky put any of your concerns to rest in that meeting?
I think he answered a lot of questions that I had for him on accountability.
Did he change your mind?
I got a vote.
McCarthy also under pressure with a potential government shutdown just over a week away. His far-right flank so far not on board to pass a stopgap measure to extend the deadline to October 31st. In South Carolina, disgraced attorney Alec Murdoch pled guilty to financial fraud and money laundering charges in federal court today. Murdoch is serving life for the double murder of his wife and son. This is ABC News.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. United States Senator Tammy Baldwin, along with 100 co-sponsors in Congress, have introduced the Child Care Stabilization Act. The legislation is intended to set up child care programs across the country, providing $16 billion in funding each year for the next 5 years. Child care issues have been at the forefront of Wisconsin politics, as Governor Tony Evers' special session this week to address child care and workforce issues in the state was largely ignored by Republican legislators. In a press release on Wednesday, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers announced he is still seeking applicants for the open seat in the Barron County Circuit Court Branch 2. Governor Evers extended the application deadline and will continue to extend it until the vacancy is filled. Judge J.M. Bitney previously held the seat and retired last week without a replacement in place yet. The new judge's term will run through July 31st, 2024. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens.
Today, I am talking to the owner of Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, my friend, Truman McGee.
From an environmentally friendly perspective, yeah. The fact that it's frozen means that it's not going to waste.
I am a cereal strawberry abuser. If you're a fruit and you're watching this, stay away from me, okay? Do not jump in my shopping cart because I will let you die.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Aaron comes in every day looking like he just stepped out of a Turkish bathhouse because it's so hot in there. Just to recap, so far the segment has been filled with dog vomit, old men peeing, and Aaron wearing a dish towel. So we're...
Hey man, your name's on the show. Your name's on the show.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Wisconsin, I have one question for you.
Do you remember when it first died, September?
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. It is Thursday, which means the professor is in. It is office hours with Professor John Shelton, and we are talking the looming government shutdown, talking democracy in regards to certain individuals who might call themselves the Freedom Caucus, but in an ironic twist of fate, are hampering our access to democratic freedom. And gentlemen, I'd like to kind of start the conversation going into a little bit more context as to what will happen when the shutdown occurs. We briefly touched on it before the break, but during shutdowns, many federal employees are told not to report for work, though a 2019 law that was passed means they will get paid retroactively when the shutdown ends. Government employees who provide services deemed essential, such as air traffic control and law enforcement, will continue to work but will not be paid until Congress takes action to end the shutdown. This applies to about 25% of federal spending subject to annual appropriation by Congress. But benefits such as Social Security and Medicare will continue to flow because they are not authorized by Congress in laws that do not need annual approval. Shutdowns can be quite disruptive, leading to delays in processing applications for passports, small business loans, government benefits, shuttered visitor centers and bathrooms at national parks, fewer food and safety inspections, various inconveniences. There's a lot that this will impact in the day-to-day life of American citizens. But as we noted, perhaps that is the goal, particularly for small government individuals who want to promote their worldview that the government is ineffective, the government serves no purpose, serves no role. They're essentially proving that when they're able to hold the United States population hostage.
Well, they think they're proving that, but all of the people inconvenienced by those services not being provided show just how far-reaching the government services that they're not funding go. So it's the opposite effect. They think that they're having this, oh, well, we don't really need it, but then the disruption a shutdown causes is the exact, it proves the point. It's like this is everything that's needed from the federal government, and it's just it's a strange position to take for in my opinion, for elected officials to just be able to be like, we don't need it. I'm still gonna get a paycheck as a member of Congress, but we don't need it. And to your point, Professor Shelton, going down the freedom category, the Freedom Caucus is the caucus that is not finding the compromise needed to be able to fund the government, something that we are currently in divided government. Republicans control the House of Representatives, where appropriations bills have to begin. And that is where we're seeing these holdups from the Freedom Caucus. What can you tell us a little bit about the current politics and what you're seeing around this Freedom Caucus kind of preventing that freedom from us being able to have a government that functions?
Yeah. And I want to say actually something that what Will was saying, I wanted to just point this out. He's right that Social Security is going to continue to be funded, but there may be delays in people getting their checks because the actual workers who send them out, and Will said this, I just want to emphasize it. The actual workers who make sure that people get paid are going to be furloughed, right? So they may not be able to get those checks out to people, even though it's funded. So there will be disruptions. You know, the part of this is about the dynamic in Congress, right? So just to remind people, the split between Democrats and Republicans is very tight. And people probably remember last January, Speaker McCarthy having to, cobble together this majority. It was very difficult. And he essentially had to agree to let the Republicans have a vote in House at any time to remove him. So he's very worried about that. So it's like 30 people or something, 35 people, the Freedom Caucus, and that gives them an outsized amount of power. And let's talk about what they want. And by the way, I think a lot of Republicans believe in some version of this in Congress. You know, their version of freedom, we keep saying that they believe in small government, and I'm guilty of saying that too. They don't actually want small government. They want government that serves their own particular interests. So they don't want to cut the military budget. They don't want to cut tax expenditures for millionaires and billionaires, right? And that's what a tax cut is. It's a tax expenditure. It's allowing those folks to profit from our nation and our economy without contributing. What they want is for ordinary people to suffer. They don't want working people to have the things that they need. And so when you think about this in the context of freedom, and this is what I really wanted to get to, that, you know, Will and I were texting about this earlier today. We have this kind of mythology in this country, and it's vested interests millionaires, billionaires, the employer class that have pushed for this mythology that what freedom means is having the government not help you out, right? It means that the government doesn't do things to make your life better, ordinary people, and that, you know, they kind of stay out of the economy and let the employers have as much power as they want. When I think back to the Declaration of Independence, and I've been teaching a book this week by Daniel Allen called Our Declaration, which everybody should read. My students really engage with it. You know, she talks about, you know, that those lines that we all know a lot about, probably, that what anybody who knows anything about the Declaration knows these lines. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that governments are instituted to secure those rights. And so when you think about what that means, what she argues, and I agree with this, is that every single person in this country has a level of equal expectation that our government should ensure our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the only reason that a government exists. And if you have one group of people who are saying, no, government shouldn't actually, you know, make sure that people are taken care of in times when they're retired or when they have a disability. No, we shouldn't worry about keeping people safe when they're traveling or making sure our food is safe. Those people don't actually believe in freedom. That's not freedom, right? That is actually taking away freedom, because freedom means, if you think about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it means that you're free to be safe when you travel across the country, to not eat tainted food, to make sure that, you know, when you aren't able to work, that you're taken care of and you can meet your needs. That's actually what freedom is. So they have a perverse view of freedom that, frankly, is un-American. It's an un-American view of freedom, and we've allowed it to continue for so long. So when you ask what it is, Luke, that the how we should hold them accountable, we're never going to get these reactionaries to change their minds. What we got to do is we got to elect different people to be in Congress. We need a Democratic Party that puts the needs of working people and the notion that government is instituted to secure all of our rights at the center of everything that they do. And if they do that, if we do that, then these reactionaries will be so marginalized that we won't have to listen to them anymore. We won't have to worry about government shutdowns. That's my view about what we should do.
To me, it reads like that when they say freedom, what they really mean is, and referring to the millionaire and billionaire class, they want freedom from consequences, right? They want to be able to do and say whatever they want without being held accountable. They want to be able to pump up their profits as much as possible. Perhaps that's by producing products that aren't safe for commercial use, food that should not really be eaten, and they won't have to worry about people getting sick or people getting hurt, or it's not their problem because it's the free market. I made a product and they chose to take it, whatever. When
worker
we are sitting here saying
worker protections too, but sorry, worker protections too. OSHA wouldn't be funded, right? So that this entity that was signed into law by Nixon, a Republican, would not be able to protect workers as long as the government is shut down. And they're fine with that.
And this is a lot of stuff that we take for granted. I see it, you know, Luke and I joke about this all the time, terminally online, but there's like a subreddit dedicated to Americans that when they're going somewhere out of the United States and the positive experiences they may have, for example, if they go to European nations that offer universal health care or something, they get hurt while they're in this country, they're expecting a massive bill. Oh, no, you're taken care of. We'll cover you because that's what we do. Healthcare is a human right. And then the other side of that, when people go to countries that don't have, for example, don't have worker protections in place, and they're seeing someone stand up on two ladders leaned against each other, you know, 35, 40 feet in the air, and they're sitting there taking pictures like, oh my gosh, what is that guy doing? That's crazy. He's going to hurt himself. Yeah, that happens all the time in these countries because they don't have these type of protections afforded to their workers.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And, you know, I think we can look at what's happening in other countries as a barometer for what's happening here. But I think I've made this point on the show in the past. We don't even have to do that. You know, we can look to our own past to think about a time in which government put the economic security and social welfare of working people front and center in all that they did. Go back to the 1930s and the New Deal and the decades that followed there. You know, you had a Democratic Party that really centered those things. And there were some contradictions, of course, right? I mean, there were racial inequalities in how the New Deal protected working people. But at the basic level, you know, ensuring things like workers' rights to organize and collectively bargain. That comes in 1935. Minimum wage and the 40-hour work week, the principle of overtime, that comes in 1938. Medicare and Medicaid, that comes in the 1960s. And I think a lot of people thought that would just be the first step in moving to a universal healthcare system, and it didn't happen. But all we have to do is look back to that time. And obviously it was a different time, but look at a politics that centered the economic security of working people. And it's not an accident that Democrats controlled Congress for virtually all of that time, right? It was really only when Democrats shifted away from that under, you know, first in the presidency with Carter in the late 70s, but then you know, big time with Clinton in the 90s, that Republicans started to gain ground. That's the only reason. It's not because what they were doing was popular. It was because people were, a lot of working voters were disaffected with the fact that you didn't have any particular mainstream party that seemed to be looking out for their interests. And that's what we have to get back to, only for updated for the 21st century, a very different time that where we privilege things like racial inclusivity and gender inclusivity and LGBTQ rights.
Perhaps a 21st century economic bill of rights is in order.
Perhaps.
Folks, you are listening to Town Call. We are joined by Professor John Shelton, discussing our office hours segment with the professor here on a Thursday afternoon. If you've got questions for John, give us a call. Send us a text, 844-967-2789. You can also take the show with you on the go. You can download the Civic Media app and engage with the show right from the app. Lets you call or text right from there. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free and easy to download. And you can call or text Town Call right from the app. Do you have faith that this is going to be maybe a compromise found over the next 9 days, Professor? Or do you have a feeling that this is going to be another one of those, as we've seen over the last 30 years, instances where the government is going to, if not a complete shutdown, a partial shutdown? Because it doesn't seem like there's even going to be compromise on any of the 12 appropriation bills to be solo passed through the House. What are your thoughts on what's going to occur over the next 9 days here?
Yeah, so I'm a historian, so the one thing I generally don't do is, like, I'm stuck in the past. I don't generally make predictions about the future, except for fantasy football, and bad ones at that.
But I was going to make a joke, but I was going to refrain from it.
Yeah, but what I will say is, you know, there's other dynamics to play into this too, right? The Republicans are also connecting this to impeaching Biden for, you know, whatever it is that they think they're impeaching him for. And so it's really hard to know what to do. What I do think is this will come down to the last minute. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the government does shut down, because, you know, all of this is, you got the presidential election next year looming over all this. And I would also hazard to say this will not be the last time we talk about a government shutdown in the near future. So it's not going away. I don't know what's going to happen, but if people have a vested interest in this, they should prepare themselves for the possibility that government might shut down for some time.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the impeachment too, John, because Senator Mike Brown said it seems like maybe part of the bargain over there is to keep folks in line on the budgetary stuff, referring to impeachment. So other Republicans are potentially saying, let's keep the government open so we can keep this impeachment going, like dangling the carrot in front of the Freedom Caucus.
And pass is definitely prologue, so it's important to see how we've been covering all of these events in the past. And if you don't have to make the predictions, but we can say what we think might happen. We're going to get into a little bit of some predictions with our labor fantasy picks of the week coming up, and taking your phone calls and text messages here on Town Call. We're going to be right back.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way.
That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly clear this afternoon with highs around 80. Winds out of the southeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows around 54. Tonight, mainly clear skies. Overcast tomorrow. Slight chance for isolated thunderstorms. Highs level off around 76. Chance for scattered storms Saturday and Sunday, 72. Saturday, 66. Sunday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 76.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. At 10, As Goes Wisconsin. Then at noon, Civic Media Network News. On Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789.
And yeah, 9 days from now, the potential for a government shutdown, federal government shutdown, if there is not a compromise found from the divided government and funding the government. If you've got thoughts, want to ask the professor, Professor John Shelton, any questions during our final segment of Office Hours, you can give us a call, send us a text, 844-967-2789. Let's head over to the phone lines. We got CJ in Stoughton calling in. CJ, what are your thoughts on this government shutdown that is potentially set to occur 9 days from now?
Thanks for taking my call. I guess the hearing the statement preventing freedom is a misnomer during this, because I have not seen a budget from Senator Schumer. And yes, this is a political move by part of the Republicans who believe that, I don't know if you've ever Googled, just do this, Google the debt clock and watch it tick, because the information that you get on that, you can watch it tick away. Every man, woman, child, and baby almost owe $100,000. And the Republicans believe that continuing at COVID spending, because a lot of this increase that was seen by spending of President Trump and Biden during that period was due to COVID. To continue that type of spending, we're now at $33 trillion and climbing. And the clock
CJ,
is amazing to
hey,
watch.
Hey, CJ, when it yes. comes to the deficit that increased under the Trump administration due to the tax cuts, do you believe yep. that was the right decision to make? Because that was blowing a hole in the deficit and the nation's debt.
Well, you know what's kind of ironic? When you hear President Biden saying that he saved $2 trillion, it was by eliminating the tax cut. Trump's tax cut would have had a net increase to the Treasury, and COVID happened. But it would have. The economy
it would have.
Was going.
You can't prove a negative that didn't happen. So that is an interesting stance
well,
to take, CJ.
COVID happened.
I appreciate you calling in, CJ. You know, let's do it again. The problem is that tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, which was the bulk of the Trump tax cuts, wouldn't have brought in more money. Right? It didn't happen under Reagan. That's supply side fantasies. It doesn't work. And in fact, what most of those companies did, and this was well before COVID, is they actually they engaged in stock buybacks and gave dividends to shareholders. This wasn't something that created more economic production that then brought money into the Treasury. But the bigger point is, if you're really concerned about the deficit, and $33 trillion sounds scary as a big number, then you know I would ask you to join me. Let's have a bipartisan effort in this country. Well, I don't know, maybe you're not a Republican, but just kind of based on what you're saying, I think you might be. Let's have a bipartisan effort in this country to have millionaires and billionaires pay their fair share, reduce the deficit. And from my view, I'm less concerned about the deficit than I am the exorbitant amount of power that people who have billions of dollars have on our political system. So it could accomplish two things, actually. It could reduce their power and reduce the deficit. So it sounds like a win-win to me. So if you're with me, we can keep having this conversation.
Agreed. And Bye. I'd also like to offer... Oh, go ahead, CJ.
No, thank you. I would like to respond this way, is that I've never gotten a job from a poor man. And the mere fact is that if everybody paid their fair share and we went to a flat tax, trust me, the rich pay their fair share. And like the small business owner of that radio station that you guys are speaking on right now, he uses those Trump tax cuts. He did. And they're going away. And the mere fact is that lower taxes draws companies back to America. We need to be competitive. And that's what drove them away. That's what sent them to Mexico. And the contract that the UAW is asking for, I've got family and friends that worked at GM, and they think it's insane. A 32-hour...
Well, CJ, 97% of UAW workers authorized that strike. So you may anecdotally hear from people that used to work with GM, but current workers at the UAW authorizing that strike, 97%.
The other thing I would say is it's not taxes that led companies to go elsewhere. It's things like NAFTA, where we made it a lot easier for companies to leave the United States, which is the most prosperous economy in the history of the world by far. And what we should actually be doing is having those companies pay their fair share for producing and selling their products here, not thinking about how we can reduce things to the lowest common denominator, right? Our economy, actually, Patrick Buchanan said this in the 1990s, and I can't believe I'm going to quote him, but he said, what is a government for if it doesn't basically create the economy that will actually protect the workers in that country? And that's what we should be doing, not focusing on giving tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires. That's not going to create the kind of economy where everybody's going to have good jobs. It's just not. It hasn't. It hasn't for 50 years. Why would it start now by not having the rich pay their fair share?
Appreciate
and as you noted,
call,
because
CJ.
Because the United States is so prosperous, they are not going to leave. The quality of life here and the potential customers that they have here is so much easier to act upon than anywhere else in the world. They're not going to go anywhere. So let's jump to our fantasy labor locks of the week. We got a couple minutes left in the show, and this is not a competition, gentlemen. We're just doing this for fun. But hypothetically, if it was a competition, I would have won last week, dropping that. Keenan Allen, 34 points. Luke went with Justin Herbert, who dropped a 25 spot. And Professor Shelton, you struggled last week. Breece Hall, 0.9. 0.9. Yeah. He did not even hit 1 point.
Not golf.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Not golf.
Yeah.
It
didn't go well. I'll admit that. But I'm going to tell you, watch out for Breece Hall the rest of the year, right? I mean, that I thought, hey, Jets are going to be running the ball a lot more because they have no competent quarterback. And Breece Hall looks great, but he just ran into the Cowboys defense.
Who's your pick this week?
We'll let you start this week, Professor Shelton.
Okay. So my pick this week is Jerry Jeudy of the Denver Broncos, right? It's not a lock, right? We're talking about what a lock means here. But I'm trying not to pick obvious things. Everybody knew Keenan Allen was going to be great last week. Sorry, Will.
Oh, come on. Get out of here.
See, okay.
He's like the seventh most expensive receiver on DFS.
I'm going to go with my flyer then. I can understand. This is my pick of the week. Jake Ferguson, former Badger tight end for those Dallas Cowboys. Got his first touchdown of the year last week. And in a very difficult tight end market, I think Ferguson is going to be producing all season, this week especially.
I like it. I may have to pick him up.
I have no
my lock
because
of the
I
week
don't
was...
know the rules.
My lock was going to be Tony Pollard because the Arizona defense is non-existent, but you're telling me I can't do that. So I will go with, I don't know, let's do Travis Etienne, I guess, against the Houston Texans.
There you go. Folks, right. You've been listening to Town Call. Professor Shelton, really appreciate you joining us for this Thursday edition of Office Hours. I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks. Have fun while I'm gone, boys. I'll talk to
you
when I'm back.
Shout out to Luke and Kelsey. Have fun.
Thanks,
have
buddy.
Have a good day, everybody.
Take it easy.
Take it easy, party people.
A new head coach.
We got one objective and one goal, is to play for a championship.
A talented backfield.
Braylon Allen does it again.
And a defense that just...
Down he goes.
Won't...
Intercepted. He's gone.
Stop.
Another turnover forced.
Join us Friday. It's the Big Ten opener on the road against Purdue. Our coverage begins at 4 on your home for Wisconsin football.
WLAK 1260 AM, Lake Air Amory.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the
ABC
Civic Media
News,
app.
I'm